Schwarzkopf very loudly complained that the spooks had failed to produce satellite imagery fast enough. The network was soon being used as a central pool by all 37 members of the United States intelligence community, from the CIA to FinCEN, Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, plus other groups connected with national security and the military. I knew that at least 50,000 people had passwords with varying levels of access. We both heard the kettle boil and click off. Mickey jumped up.
Tea? Milk? Sugar?
Strong. Shaken, not stirred. I heard him giggle as I pulled out the wad of A4 paper, filed in three clear plastic sleeves. It was definitely stuff off Interlink. On the top file I could see the Meta tagging. IL.CIA, Executive Order 12958, Classified National Security Information. Meta, Megadata, is a system for pulling down the documents needed from hundreds of thousands on call. The information available is nearly 500,000 electronic pages. Just over 80% of all the National Security Agency's output can be accessed in 2 hours. The rest of the title went on to give its level of security. This document was tagged Interlink P, in other words, managed purely by the CIA and top secret, available only to policymakers. Mickey came back with the tea. I had just finished skimming through the rest of the tags. This was looking good. There was another Interlink P and an Interlink TS, classified secret. About a third of the intelligence community have access at this level. I was quite looking forward to having a read. I looked at Mickey as he held a sugar lump on a spoon for me. I shook my head. How on earth did your friend get this stuff? He sat down and proceeded to put four lumps in his cup. Well, the objective is the eventual flow down or up of information as various security classifications impose themselves. Right now, standard COTS tools are used, but they're not specially augmented with multi-level security. These tools don't provide the right hooks. So, for now, different levels of security are provided by different physical levels of security. So, there's an issue regarding upgrading and downgrading information between security levels. I gave up listening to him halfway through his waffle. What the fuck are you on about? His spoon fought a battle with the amount of sugar in his cup. If they say something is an issue, it means they haven't got that sorted out yet. Now and again you can confuse the system, especially when it's new and is taking a while to sort itself out. He went back into Cheshire Cat mode and took a sip of what must have been very sweet tea. I was waiting for his teeth to drop out as he spoke. The only one that can't be got into at the moment is a new fourth level. It hasn't even got a name that I know of. Maybe it's only for the President and a few of his best buddies. Who knows? I didn't touch my cup, just kept flicking through the pages, looking for things I understood. I heard him slurp another mouthful of tea, and then a loud swallow. There will be a lot in there that is of no use to you whatsoever. He just pulled down any document containing information that might be relevant. He's such a nice boy. Drink your tea, Nick, it'll get cold. I nodded and didn't say a word. He got the hint. I heard the cup go down on its saucer. Mickey stood up and went back into the kitchen, then returned with his laptop bag. Nick, I hope you find it interesting reading. I've left the milk and tea for you. I looked up at him. Thanks, mate. Of course, you'll destroy all the files before you leave. No problem. He got to the door and turned, dangling the apartment keys between his thumb and index finger. By the way, send my love to Sarah. Tell her if she needs these, I'll be leaving them with Wayne. I looked at him, trying to look confused. What? His eyes twinkled.
Oh, you are so transparent, Nick. PV? Pants? That's what it is. A load of frilly old pants. I'm not that mad, you know. I bet they told you I was, didn't they? Well, let's just let them think it. Pension? That's what it's all about. My absolutely gorgeous disability pension. Still highly amused with the whole thing, he turned to leave. I said, Michael, thank your friend for all his help. He looked back with a smile that suggested it had already been taken care of. Been there, done that. Now, remember, say a special hello to Sarah for me. Bye! The door closed behind him. I got off the settee and turned the lock. If anybody decided to hit the place, it should at least give me enough time to get the papers down the toilet. I checked out Baby G. An hour to go before the RV with Sarah. I pulled out the papers that were tagged Interlink P, Executive Order 12958. I turned the pages, but they meant nothing to me, just lots of directions on security of documents. Maybe Mickey's friend had a sense of humour. Next was Executive Order 12863 on the PIFIAB, President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and Executive Order 12968, Access to Classified Information. I thumbed through acres of stuff that was full of abbreviations and acronyms. I understood ZIF. Then I saw the reason I'd been given it. One of the sub-paragraphs was entitled Yusuf. I felt a jolt of adrenaline. I read slowly, making sure I understood every word. Since 1995, several senior officials in Clinton's administration had been under surveillance by the FBI. At first, they suspected that one of them was spying for the Saudi government, but more recently, that information was being leaked to Bin Laden. According to this report, the hunt for Yusuf had narrowed to include a senior official on the National Security Council, the 1,200-strong body that advises the President on intelligence and defense-related matters. Its office is in the White House. I picked up my lukewarm tea. It tasted shit. I'd have to make a new brew. I went to the kitchen with the files. There was plenty of jargon and junk, but it was clear that the hunt for Yusuf had begun after the interception of a message between Washington and Bin Laden's farm in the Sudan that hinted about an agent who might be able to get a copy of a secret letter signed by Warren Christopher, then Secretary of State, which spelled out American commitments to the Palestinians in the Middle East peace process. The handler in the Sudan had replied, "That is not what we use Yusuf for." The report carried on to say that they believed there was little chance of discovering Yusuf's identity after the intercept, because he would have been one of the first to learn about it on Interlink. All communication between him and his handlers would have ceased. I had a quiet laugh to myself. Maybe that was what the fourth level of Interlink was all about, trying to keep people like him out of the loop. There were references to other documents relating to Yusuf, but Mickey's friend hadn't included them. I placed the cup on the floor and picked up another Interlink P file. Its tag told me it was a CIA document entitled simply Counter-Terrorism Center. It wasn't the whole document, just the introduction, but even that ran to 15 pages. I definitely needed more tea. When the Clinton administration endorsed the idea of specialized units to infiltrate terrorist operations and disrupt them, the CIA established the Counter-Terrorism Center as a central clearinghouse for intelligence. Its aim was to give the president more options for action against foreign terrorists to further preempt, disrupt, and defeat international terrorism. These options included covert operations designed to prevent terrorism, or to take revenge for successful attacks on Americans. New cadres of undercover CIA officers were sent overseas, and the use of CIA teams was expanded to assess and predict threats against United States military personnel deployed abroad. Part of this strategy was a new level of cooperation between the intelligence agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, its traditional rival. Senior FBI agents stationed overseas held long and successful meetings with CIA station chiefs, the first at the United States Embassy in Rome, the second at the Embassy in London, to work out ways to cooperate against terrorists and other international criminals. The kettle boiled and cut out. I left it for a while. This was getting interesting. I knew that such a meeting would have been unthinkable as recently as 2 years ago, when the two agencies were at each other's throats over their conduct in the investigation and arrest of Aldrich Ames, a spy for Moscow inside the CIA. I put the file down, threw a tea bag into a cup and poured. The next page dealt with Sarah's group. The unit had scored several successes. British police raided the London home of an Algerian named Rashid Ramda and found links with the Armed Islamic Group, an Algerian organisation suspected of 7 bombings in France that killed 7 and wounded 180 in 1997. The police also discovered records of money transfers and traced them to bin Laden's headquarters in the Sudan. In Egypt, security officials uncovered a conspiracy by the extremist group Islamic Jihad to assassinate President Hosni Mubarak. It seemed that Sarah's group was investigating evidence that bin Laden helped fund the plot. They also had evidence that bin Laden was the major backer of a camp in Afghanistan called Kunar, which provided training for recruits of Islamic Jihad and the Islamic Group, both Egyptian terrorist organizations. This was in addition to the 3 terrorist training camps in northern Sudan, which bin Laden helped to fund, and where extremists from Egypt, Algeria and Tunisia received instruction. I threw the tea bag into the sink, added milk, and wandered back to the settee to read some more. Sarah's explanation of events was becoming more convincing as the minutes passed. I sat back down. To track bin Laden's activities, the National Security Agency's eavesdropping satellites were used to listen in on telephone and email conversations throughout the world. CIA analysts were able to determine that in January, he had held a meeting with leading members of his network to prepare for a new wave of terrorism. Soon afterwards, he publicly announced his intentions when he issued a fatwa calling on Muslims to kill Americans. I had a drink and held the cup on my chest, slumped on the sofa. American officials are barred by executive order from planning an assassination. But after the fatwa was issued, bin Laden was named in a secret presidential covert action order on terrorism, signed by Bill Clinton, which authorized intelligence agencies to plan and carry out covert operations that might lead to death. Such a measure was necessary, the report concluded, for 2 reasons. 1. We believe that bin Laden is planning new terrorist acts against American interests. 2. We believe that the question is not whether bin Laden will strike again, but when. I bent my neck forward and drained the cup. I checked my watch. 30 minutes to go to the RV. I went back into the kitchen and turned on the electric hob, then placed my cup and the 2 files I'd read on the worktop. It was time for file number 3. This one came from an acronym, DOSFAN, which I didn't recognize. The document discussed the investigation and arrest of several of bin Laden's operators worldwide. The hot plate was red. I saw a smoke alarm on the ceiling and stood on the sink unit to pull out the batteries. Then I touched one of the papers I'd read to the plate. Once it was in flames, I placed it in the sink, put a few more on top and carried on reading. The first few pages detailed those responsible for the World Trade Center bombing. Mohammed Salameh, a Palestinian, and his roommate in a Jersey City apartment, Ramzi Ahmed, an Iraqi who'd fought in Afghanistan and arrived at Kennedy International Airport on a flight from Pakistan in September 1992. After the bombing, he spent most of the next 3 years until his eventual arrest at a guest house called the House of Martyrs in Peshawar, Pakistan, which was owned by bin Laden. on that same flight in 1992, had been Ahmed Ajaj, a Palestinian fresh from Afghanistan whose suitcase was full of bomb-making manuals. Ajaj was convicted in the Trade Center bombing, as was Mahmoud Abu Halima, who raised money for the rebels. Arrested in Egypt, he told his captors that the bombing was planned in Afghanistan by veterans of the jihad. Meeting at a New York mosque, Ramzi Ahmed recruited Mahmoud Salameh, Nidal Ayad, and Mahmoud Abu Halima. They helped him buy and mix explosive chemicals in cheap apartments and a rented storage space in Jersey City. Abdul Rahman Yassin, an Iraqi, was also recruited. From time to time, I fed the fire in the sink. Halfway down the third page, I found out what DOSFAN stood for. Department of State Foreign Affairs Network, Mideast Policy Group. The report went on to detail individuals from one particular cell that was under scrutiny, and their names tallied with those Sarah had given me. I finished the last four pages and burned them too. I felt as if I'd been speed-reading Tolstoy's War and Peace. I turned the tap on and pressed the button for the waste disposal unit. There was the wailing of metal as it took the black ash. I got a grip on myself and decided it didn't change a thing. All I cared about was Josh's kids. Another thing Sarah had been right about. There was no one to turn to. Josh couldn't be trusted not to approach one of his superiors. Even if his kids didn't go to the ceremony, the others would still be at risk, and he'd want to do something about it. I watched the last bit of ash swirl down the hole and turned off the tap and waste disposal. Only 5 minutes left to the RV. I was going to be late, but it wasn't as if she had anywhere else to go. Fuck it. I'd have to get her into the White House without Josh knowing what we were up to. I didn't know quite how I was going to do it. Once again, I felt more bonehead than Bond. I walked into the bookshop after clearing the area. The coffee shop was to the rear, and I spotted Sarah at one of the tables, nursing a tall latte. She was dressed much smarter than when I'd last seen her. The baseball cap was gone, and in its place was a grey trouser suit and designer loafers that must have sent her credit card into meltdown. Her facial appearance had been totally changed by a pair of black, rectangular, thick-rimmed glasses. As I approached, she smiled and gave me the, "Hello, so nice to see you," RV drill look. I looked surprised and delighted. Not that I had to fake it. And she stood up for the lovey-lovey kiss on the cheeks. "How are you? It's so good to see you." She voiced her pleasure for the benefit of the people around us. We sat down and I put my nylon bag beside her new leather one and matching briefcase. She noticed my raised eyebrow and said, "Well, I should be looking the part. I am a lawyer, remember?" I smiled, and she gazed at me for several seconds before taking a studied sip of her coffee. Then she gave me the smallest of smiles. "Well?" What could I do but nod? "Yep. Let's get on with it. But we do it the way I need it to be done, okay?" She nodded back, her smile slowly widening into a victory grin. I was right, wasn't I? We left the bookshop and walked along the main street. I told her everything from what Lynn and Elizabeth had said to the attack on the house. I just left the T-104 out of the story, and kept the return to the UK in its place. She never asked. I also told her about Kelly, the events that made me her guardian, and where Josh stood in all of this. It would undoubtedly come into any conversation once we met up. We met when we did, okay. The dates and everything will work. You used to work for us as a secretary. She nodded. I said, "We didn't see each other because it was all too complicated. Then we met up again." "How long ago was the Syria job?" "Late 95. About 3.5 years ago." "Okay, We met again 4 weeks ago in London in a pub in Cambridge Street. And we sort of got back together. Saw each other, nothing big time. And this is our first trip together. We've come here because you've never been before and I like Washington, so we thought, fuck it, let's do it. She cut in. But I told the kid I'm a lawyer and I'm working. I didn't like her calling Kelly that. But she was right about the story. Okay, you're in the States to meet a client in New York. And I wanted to show you DC. The rest you can busk. Fine. There's only one problem, Nick.
What's that?
What's your name? Who are you?
I'm Nick Stone.
She laughed. You mean that's your real name?
Yeah, of course.
And then it dawned on me. After all the years that we'd known each other, I didn't know her name either. I'd only ever known her as Greenwood.
I've shown you mine, you show me yours.
She was suddenly a bit sheepish. Sarah Jarvis Cockley.
It was my turn to laugh. I'd never known anyone with such a fucked-up name.
Jarvis Cockley. It was pure Monty Python. It's a Yorkshire name, she said. My father was born in York.
Stopping at a call booth, I tried Josh's number. It would be pointless travelling there if he hadn't got home yet.
He was in, and sounded excited about seeing us both. We got a cab, crossed back over the river and followed the Jefferson Davis Highway southwest, away from DC towards the Pentagon. We didn't talk. There was nothing left to talk about. She'd told me what the two players looked like while we waited for a cab. It was hardly worth the wait. Neither appeared to have any special features that were likely to make them stick out. From the sound of things, we'd be looking for Bill Gates and Al Gore, only with darker skin. We were both too tired to say any more. It was easier for us to leave each other with our own thoughts, and mine centred on how the fuck I was going to do this. She put her arm in mine and squeezed my hand. She knew what I was thinking. I had a feeling she usually did, and somehow that felt good. We approached Arlington National Cemetery. I could see aircraft emerging above the trees on the opposite side of the road as they took off from the national airport by the river. At least the sun was trying to come out, even if it was in patches through the cloud. I gazed at the row upon row of white tombstones standing in immaculate lines on the impossibly green grass to our right. Heroism in the face of idiocy was an everyday job for me. But it was difficult not to be affected by the sheer scale of death in this place. I knew the Pentagon was just around the corner as the highway gently turned right. The traffic wasn't that bad now. It would be much worse in a few hours as the staff of the world's biggest office complex headed home. The car parks each side of us were the size of Disneyland's. The Pentagon came into view. It looked just like the Fayetteville Mall, except that the stone was a more depressing colour. We lost sight of it momentarily as we went under a road bridge. One of the supports still bore a crudely painted white swastika. Josh had seen it as a sign of democracy.
The day they clean it off, he once said to me, is the day no one can speak out. I just saw it as the halfway marker between his house and DC.
About another 20 minutes, I said. Sarah nodded and kept on staring at the massive stone building. A Chinook helicopter was lifting from the rear of it, the tailgate just closing. I always liked it once the gate closed. It kept the cold out. I'd been to Josh's house many times before while we sorted out Kelly's future. They lived in a suburb called New Alexandria, which was south of Alexandria proper, and quite a way southwest of DC. But people who lived there called it Bellevue, after the district next door. That way it didn't sound as if they wanted to live in Alexandria, but had been forced to buy a little further away. The nearer your house was to DC, the bigger your bank balance had to be. Josh's house was on the Bellevue Road, overlooking the golf course. As we turned onto it, I gave the taxi driver directions. "Halfway down, mate, on the right." Sarah moved closer to me and leaned to whisper in my ear. "Thank you for believing me, Nick. I'm glad you're here." I knew how lonely she felt. I put my fingers between hers. The golf course was to the left, and facing it were rows of three-story brick-built homes that in the UK would be called townhouses. The whole area was green and leafy and probably a wonderful place for kids to grow up in. I half expected snowflakes to start falling and James Stewart to appear round the corner. "Just behind that black pickup." The Asian driver grunted and pulled in. Parked on the drive outside Josh's was a double-cabbed Dodge truck with large chrome bumpers, and kids' mountain bikes stashed on a rack at the back. A big for-sale sign was hanging outside the house. A middle-aged Mexican woman in a cream raincoat emerged from the front door, which was about 10 very worn stone steps above pavement level. She looked at us and smiled, then just carried on past. I looked at Sarah. "That must be my new friend." Josh appeared at the door, all smiles, his head and glasses shining as brightly as his teeth. He was wearing a grey sweatshirt tucked into belted grey cargo fatigue trousers and a pair of walking boots. As he came down towards us, he was still grinning away, but concentrating more on getting a good view of Sarah through the sun bouncing off the taxi windows. He opened the door for me, and I stepped out after paying off the driver, who took my money with another grunt. We shook hands, and he reminded me that he had the strongest grip of anyone I knew. He said, "Great to see you, man. I didn't think we'd link up again so soon." He lowered his voice. "How did the job go?" "Not too bad, mate. It took a day, that was all." It was good to see him. He released my hand, and I pumped it, trying to get some blood back. Sarah came round the front of the taxi, between the two vehicles. I held my hand out towards her. "Josh, meet Sarah." "Hi, Sarah." He shook her hand and I saw her reaction to his grip.
"Nice to meet you, Josh. Nick has told me a lot about you."
She must have been reading too many books. Whoever says that in real life? Josh just gave her his biggest smile. "I don't know what he said, but when we get inside, I'll tell you the truth." He ushered us up the steps and through his front door. The first thing Sarah asked for was the bathroom. Josh pointed up the stairs. "First on the left." As an afterthought, he called after her. "We're going into the living room, so you make as much noise as you want." That was something I'd forgotten to warn her about. Josh didn't change his sense of humour for anybody. I wondered if that was one of the reasons his wife had eloped with a tree-hugging yoga teacher. The holiday cases were still in the hallway. "Where are the kids?" I asked as we walked past them.
"Jet lag is not an option with kids. It's rehearsal time in DC, man. The big day is tomorrow."
I wasn't going to pursue the subject. It made me feel too much of a lowlife, and besides, it was too early to hit him with the real reason I was here.
"Of course they are. I hope they have a good time."
The house hadn't changed at all. The flowery three-piece suite and thick green shag pile carpet were still in place. The pictures were the same, and you couldn't move for them. Josh as a soldier. Josh becoming a member of Special Forces. Josh and the kids. Josh and Jerry. The kids. All that sort of stuff. Plus all those horrible school photographs. Rows of gappy-toothed kids in uniform with that really stupid grin that they only do when there's a camera pointing at them. He closed the door and said,
"So, my friend, how does it all square with Sarah? What does she know?"
I stepped closer to him.
"All she knows
is that Kelly's family were killed and I'm now her guardian. She knows what Kev did, and how I knew him. You're the other executor of the will. That's how we became friends. She thinks I work for a private security firm. We haven't got down to details yet. He nodded. That was more or less all he knew about me, anyway. Cool. Now, a couple of details to get out of the way, mate. Do I get Maria to make up one bed or two? It had always sounded really funny to me when Americans said mate because of the accent. The word sounds like it should only come out of Antipodeans or Brits. But Josh had got into the Brits' way of speaking with me. Either that, or he'd been taking the piss all this time. It was a good question, and I had to make the answer sound convincing. I smiled. One, of course.
All right.
A big conspiratorial grin lit up his face. We both sat down, him on a chair, me on the settee. Next important question. How is Kelly? She get to her grandparents okay? She's fine. Yes, everything went okay. I spoke to her today. She's missing you and the crew. I think you'll be getting a thank you card from her soon. The small talk was already killing me. Normally, I would chat happily about that sort of shit. It was what our relationship was all about. But at the moment, all I could think about was the fact that I was about to fuck him over big time, even though I knew it was the right thing. The door opened and Sarah came in. Josh stood up. Anyone for a brew? I laughed. To Americans, a brew means a beer. I'd once been with Josh and had said, "Do you fancy a brew?" He'd looked at me as if I should be certified. One, we were driving. Two, we were looking after kids. And three, it was 9 o'clock in the morning. It had been a bit of a standing joke ever since. Sarah was out of this one. She sort of smiled to look as though she got it, but she probably wasn't used to being offered a brew at embassy cocktail parties, and it certainly wasn't going to be a big thing in her social circle. He turned to Sarah. Coffee, good for you? Thank you. He turned and walked towards the door, talking as he went. The kids will be back from singing practice soon, and all hell will break loose. It'll be so cool for them to find you here. We listened to him pottering around in the kitchen. Sarah went and sat on one of the chairs, only a short distance from me, but significant in the circumstances. I said, Sarah, we're sharing a room tonight. She got it immediately, stood up and came and sat next to me. What now? It was pointless bullshitting her. I don't know. Switch on and take my lead. It's far too early yet. She looked anxiously at the carpet. I'm worried, Nick. This has got to work. Trust me. Look over there. I nodded towards the books to the right of the fireplace. Second shelf down. What had caught my eye was Designing Camelot, the Kennedy White House restoration. I looked at her through her glasses. That's got to be a good omen. I hoped I sounded more confident than I felt. She saw it, and her expression gained a new determination. Josh came back with the coffee pot, mugs and biscuits as she was pulling it from the shelf. He started to pour. Flat white? He asked. We nodded. He saw Sarah flicking the pages, admiring the pictures of the White House interior. She looked up and caught his eye. Now, there's a classy lady. She turned the book round so we could see the picture of Jackie O.
Yes, ma'am. She certainly turned this town upside down. That's her in the state dining room. She was our Princess Diana, I guess you could say. Jerry loved her. I bought her that book for her birthday just before she left.
He started to open the packet of biscuits. I have to hide these from the kids, otherwise there'd be none left.
You know what? He said, through a mouthful of biscuit. I didn't realize all the things you have to do when you're looking after kids single-handed. I've had to learn so much.
Sarah looked surprised.
Josh looked over at me quite happily.
You didn't explain?
I thought I'd leave it to you, I said, trying to turn it into a joke.
Yeah, leave it to you, then I'll tell her the truth later on.
He looked at Sarah.
Jerry had gotten more and more involved in local projects and classes, that sort of thing, so that she could, he pulled a face to underline the words, better herself.
He passed a mug of coffee to her.
One of them was yoga. You know, I guess I was too busy working and stuff to see what was going on. I just didn't notice the classes were lasting longer as the months passed.
I smiled in sympathy as he passed me my mug, and we had eye to eye.
In fact, she got to like the classes so much, she never really wanted to come home.
I could see him looking at Sarah for her reaction. He'd managed to make it sound like a joke, but I knew that deep down he was devastated. I felt guilty as hell as I listened to Sarah doing a number on him, but I knew it was the only way. Nodding towards the pictures above the gas log fire, Sarah continued to reel him in.
What about the children? They're such beautiful kids. Whatever got into her to make her leave them?
He picked up his coffee and sat back.
The yoga teacher. That's what got into her.
He tried to laugh, but it was starting to really hurt him now. Sarah took a second or two to get that one, but I could see from her eyes that she'd picked up on Josh's sadness.
She calls once a week, Josh said. The kids miss her real bad.
How long has it been? She asked quietly.
Must be about 9 months or so.
He looked over at me. I nodded. The timing was about right. Not that he didn't know. I bet he'd counted every single day. He took a sip from his mug, deep in thought. We all sat in silence for a while, until Sarah asked a couple of polite, ice-breaking questions about the children, and Josh told her what she already knew. She was good. They were bonding. He was almost enjoying having a woman listen to the story and appear to understand his point of view. There came a sound of crashing and slamming and shouting in heavily accented English. Maria was back with the kids and telling them to slow down. She put her head through the door.
Hola!
A second or two later, the kids came surging past her to see their dad. At that moment, they spotted me.
Nick! Nick! Is Kelly here?
Then they stopped and got embarrassed because they saw somebody they didn't know.
Hiya, I beamed.
No, Kelly's at school.
Did you enjoy your time in London?
Yeah, it was cool. It's a shame Kelly can't be here, though.
They were all excited. They went over to their dad, kissing and cuddling him until he was buried.
You guys, this is Sarah, Nick's friend. Say hello to Sarah.
All together they shouted,
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, everybody. Very nice to meet you.
She shook each of them by the hand. Formalities over. It all changed. It was straight into, Dad, can I do this? Dad, can I do that?
Dad, it's really cool. There are kids from everywhere, even New Mexico. Some of them are going swimming. Can we go swimming?
Josh said, Yes, 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 but later. Maria will arrange it. Go and have something to eat. Go, go, go.
The kids went out in a whirlwind and headed for the kitchen. I heard the radio go on. Tuned in to a Latin music station. We heard them all squabbling and Maria making the most noise of all, telling them to keep the noise down. I carried on looking for a time when I could hit him with my pitch. The kids went out, came back, eventually went to bed, and Maria went home. By then, we'd seen the new garden shed. We'd talked about Christmas, Easter, even about Thanksgiving and the different ways Americans and Brits stuff their turkeys. I still preferred Paxo to peanuts. Josh told Sarah about tomorrow's events and what the kids were going to be doing. He couldn't disguise his pride that his kids were part of it all. He was going to be watching it with some of the ERT, Emergency Response Team people, whose kids were also involved. Sarah was perfect all the time. Maybe it wasn't even put on, because something told me she genuinely liked Josh. I was glad, as these were the only two adults I had any feeling for. I wanted them to like each other. It mattered to me. Fuck the job in hand, I knew it had to be done. And soon. But we seemed to be moving into something more important between us. I hoped so. Once the job was finished, I needed Josh to appreciate our reasons for keeping him in the dark. Before we knew it, we'd had pizza, nachos, a couple of bottles of wine, and it was nearly 10 o'clock. We seemed set to spin shit all night, but I knew I had to wait for the right moment. I listened to the other two as they put the will to rights. I heard Josh saying, "Have you met Kelly yet?" Sarah was just sitting back drinking wine next to me. "Kelly? No, I haven't. Not yet. You know Nick. He keeps his cards very close to his chest." She gave me one of those strange looks couples give each other when they're talking about one thing, but thinking about something else. "I have spoken to her, though." She was keeping the lies close to the truth. It was always the best way. Josh said, "She's a really good kid. You'll like her a lot. Maybe if Jerry was here, Kelly would have come to live with us and the kids. It's been really hard for her." Sarah looked at me to carry on the story. I began to think she was liking this, finding out about me. "Yeah. But me and her, it's all right," I mumbled. Sarah reached out and grasped my hand. Josh broke the silence. "You sure you two don't want to be alone?" We all started laughing. I looked at Josh and remembered that I had a job to do, and now was the time to do it. "May, I've just had a brilliant idea. Well, good for us, but maybe hard for you to sort out." He sat back and took a sip of wine. "Yes? And what could that be?" He suddenly sounded like my dad. "Well, if there was any chance of a trip round the White House for us, you know, like the time you took me round before, Sarah would love me forever." I smiled at her. She picked up the ball, blushed, and her eyes lit up. "That would be absolutely brilliant. Can you really fix that, Josh?" Josh wasn't looking too sure. "Well..." I decided to jump in and keep it all upbeat. Looking at Sarah, whose face now resembled that of a child at a fun fair, I said, "This boy is the greatest. He took me round the White House last year. He was running the Vice Presidential Protection Team." "Oh, I'd love that. That would be fantastic." She was making all the right noises. I said, "There's a bowling alley in the basement, so Bill can go and have a bit of a practice. And some of the stonework still has scorch marks from when the Brits tried to burn it down in 1800 and something or other." She turned to Josh. "Is he bullshitting me?" He shook his head as he took another sip of wine. "No, the Brits came to Washington and burned the lot down. It was 1814. I said, "Come on then, mate. What do you say? I'll even buy a crap tie to make me look like Secret Service if you want. What do you say?" I always took the piss out of the way they dressed. The White House team's uniform seemed to be either a grey suit or a blue blazer and dark grey trousers. The only thing they were allowed to have choice over, it seemed, was their ties. I'd never seen so many Daffy Ducks and Mickey Mouses in one place, apart from the window of Tyrak.
Josh had an impressive display of sheep jumping over gates and Bugs Bunny eating carrots. It was time for him to insult me in return.
Lard arse, you will never look like an agent, no matter how hard you try.
Sarah stood up. This is way over my head, she grinned, so I'm going to pop upstairs again. She knew it was time to leave us alone. She raised an eyebrow at Josh. I'll shut the door this time, so you won't be embarrassed if I make a noise. Josh rocked back on his chair and started laughing as the door closed behind her.
He looked at me. She's cool, man. Real cool.
I could see his smile tighten. I was sure he was thinking about Jerry and how much he missed her. I felt sorry for him, but I didn't want to let him off the hook.
What do you reckon then, May?
Any chance?
It would be great for her, and on top of that I'd score an unbelievable number of brownie points, if you know what I mean.
He sat back in his chair, holding his arms up in mock surrender.
Whoa, man, chill. Chill out on trying to sell it to me. I got it.
He put his arms back down and got serious.
I'll try, but I can't say for sure, he said. I'll phone up in the morning. What's your cutoff time?
It's got to be 3 at the latest. We're on the 6-something flight from Dulles to Newark.
He held up his hands again.
Okay, okay. I'll see what I can do. Tomorrow's a big deal up there, but maybe we can go in the morning. Nothing's going to kick off until around midday, and the kids won't be doing their thing until 1.
He put his glass down, filled it up again and offered me some. I nodded and passed mine over. He hadn't noticed that I was only sipping whilst he was knocking it back. Josh held up his glass.
It's really good to see you, man.
I raised mine.
And you, lardass.
Sarah walked back in, probably having listened behind the door the whole time. I gave her a big smile as she sat down. Josh says we might be able to get in tomorrow before we go back to New York. He's going to see what he can do. She gave him the sort of look that would have made a blind man's heart beat faster. His face lit up.
Hey, you know what? I have a neat idea. If I can't take you in myself, I could probably get you on one of the tours. You could always come back and go round with me another time.
Sarah carried on looking excited, but I knew that she'd be flapping inside. Josh continued.
I could organize tickets for you both without much trouble. You won't see the bowling alley or the pool, just the main building reception rooms, but hey.
He looked straight at Sarah.
The important thing is you get to see the state dining room. And that's the only part left that Jackie O furnished. It's the room in the picture you showed me.
Sarah reached across and touched his hand. I could see she wished she'd never mentioned the woman.
Thank you. That would be great. I just hope that we'll be able to do it with you. It would be much more fun.
Josh just about melted.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It would be kind of cool to show you around. I promise I'll call in the morning. That's all I can do, man.
It's going to happen, believe me, I said to Sarah.
I told him if it didn't, I'd tell the White House about the rubber duck.
The what?
Josh looked at me with an embarrassed smile.
I said, there's this yellow rubber duck that gets passed around all the different sections in the Secret Service, and the unit.
She cut in.
The unit?
She was well aware of what I was referring to, but she knew Josh would expect her not to be.
Delta Force, I explained. Sort of the American SAS.
Anyway, the big thing is to have a picture taken with the duck in the most unusual places. Josh's task was to get photos taken in the White House. So he had one of it floating in the president's toilet in the private apartments, and he even managed one on the desk in the Oval Office. Josh yawned politely and started rising to his feet.
On that happy note.
As we said our good nights, Sarah picked up the Kennedy book and put it under her arm, and we all trundled up the stairs. At the top landing, Josh went left to check on his kids. Through their open doors I could see nightlights glowing below a poster of a basketball hero, and a big picture of their mother. Duvets and toys were strewn everywhere. Our bedroom was further along to the right. It was exactly what might be expected of a spare room in one of these houses, very clean and new-looking, with a polished wax pine bed with shiny nuts and bolts showing either side. I got the feeling the design choices had been Jerry's, not Josh's, because it was all matching flowery curtains, pillowcases and duvet covers. If anything good was to come of Jerry leaving, it was that Josh could sort out the decor in the next house. The bed was made up, with one corner of the duvet pulled back invitingly. Maria had done such a professional job that I half expected to see a note with tomorrow's temperature and a chocolate on the pillow. I closed the door behind us, and right away Sarah was into her bag. She picked up her weapon and mag, and went into the ensuite, leaving the door ajar. I watched as she loaded it by pulling back the top slide, placing a round in the chamber and letting the action go forward, under control to cut out any noise. Then, just pushing the last 2 millimeters into place against the round. She then pushed the magazine in quietly until there was a click. I laughed. You expecting a rough night? She turned and smiled, then checked safety. I got up and joined her in the bathroom. Sarah turned on the tap in the basin and started to clean her teeth. The danger with whispering is that you can make an even louder noise by doing it incorrectly than you would by talking. I leaned into her ear and said, "If he does get us in, then no matter what, we don't harm him, okay? We don't harm him or anyone else. Have you got that?" She nodded as she spat out toothpaste. I said, "We're all on the same side here. If we get caught or even challenged, we don't fight back. Nobody gets killed, and we don't take weapons, okay? They stay in the bags." The security would be so tight, we'd never be able to get them in. Anyway, we don't need them. She rinsed her teeth, turned and nodded her agreement, offering me the toothbrush. "Thanks." Our eyes met, then she smiled and went into the bedroom. I watched her undress as I brushed my teeth. She laid her clothes neatly over the chair, and when she was completely naked, she started taking off the price tags from the new lace underwear she'd bought to wear the next day. As ever, she wasn't shy about her body, but I sensed this was different from her performance in the motel. That was business, whilst this was, well, whatever it was, it felt good. I watched her in the glow of the bedside light. Digging into her bag again, she took out a new shirt, unwrapped it, and put it on the chair. Then she looked up at me and smiled. I finished my teeth as she came back in, and we swapped rooms again. As the bathroom door closed, I sat on the bed and started to pull my clothes off, thinking about the prospects for tomorrow. I could hear Josh opening and closing doors somewhere along the corridor, checking on the kids again, I guessed, or locking up, or whatever he did at this time of night. The toilet flushed, and after a while Sarah appeared. She pulled back the duvet and climbed in beside me. I smelled toothpaste on her breath and soap on her skin. Her leg touched mine. I wasn't sure how accidentally. Her skin felt cool and smooth. We both lay there, thinking our own thoughts. I wondered whether her thoughts were anything like mine. After a while, she turned to me. "What are you going to do after this, Nick? After you've left the service, I mean." It was something I had always tried not to give any thought to. I shrugged.
I don't know. I never think that far ahead. Never have. Tomorrow night, that's far enough. And I hope I'll be celebrating that we're all still alive.
I don't think I'll stay in, she said. I'll probably do what everybody else does. Get married, have children, all that sort of stuff. I sometimes wish I had a child.
She lifted herself up on one elbow and looked into my eyes.
Does that sound crazy?
I shook my head. Not since I've had Kelly.
You're very lucky.
She moved her face closer, and I could feel her breath on my neck.
Maybe I'll write my memoirs.
She brushed my face with her hand.
But where could I possibly start the story?
She paused, her eyes shining.
And what would I say about you?
I smiled. Not easy.
Fuck, if she carried on like this, I'd go to pieces and tell her I was in love with her or some shit like that. I couldn't handle it at all.
Her lips brushed against my forehead too lightly for it to be a kiss,
then moved down to my cheek. I turned my head and my mouth met hers. I closed my eyes and could feel her body half on top of mine, her hair brushing my face. Her kiss was long, gentle and caring, then suddenly more urgent. She pressed her body hard against mine.
Chapter 25 I was woken by the screams of 200 kids. Or at least, that was what it sounded like. I kept my eyes closed and listened to the din. Maria had arrived and was trying to shush and organize them, and in doing so she was stirring things up even more. A herd of elephants went downstairs, followed by Mexican commands to put on a clean sock as she went past our door. I opened my eyes and looked at Baby G. It was 6:58. I yawned, turned and saw Sarah. She was sitting up, flicking through the Jackie O book. I muttered, "What was that you were saying about children last night?" Eyes firmly fixed on the page, she nodded, not listening. I hoped this wasn't going to be one of those terrible mornings after, when both of us desperately wished we were somewhere else, and neither of us could bring ourselves to be the first to go for eye contact. I hoped not, because I knew it would only be that way for me if it was for her.
"Time spent on reconnaissance is seldom wasted, Nick," she said, glancing at me and smiling.
Things were looking up. I propped myself up and checked the scabs on my arm. They were sealing up okay. The bruising was now